I'm here in the Dublin Mountains on a beautiful day, and I'm in the O'Kelly home with Joan O'Kelly, and I'm with Frank Tracy as well. And Joan, can I start? Your maiden name was Casey,
That's
and
right.
tell me about the Caseys.
Well, the cases originated from Crook, and there was 18 in the Casey family, and two brothers married two sisters. So there was Upper Crook and Lower Crook, and my father was in Lower Crook. So as time went by, and all the houses from Crook Cemetery to the Hellfire Club was called the Casey Mountain. But every house from there was between brothers and sisters.
Because your cousins and aunts,
Yes,
and
yeah.
so it was all made up of the
The
Caseys,
Casey
yes.
Mountain, yeah. Although there was O'Connors and Keegans, because they were two sisters, Caseys, that got married to Keegan and O'Connors. So they were the two odd names, but yet they were Caseys.
Yeah. Frank, give me the history of Killickey House briefly.
Well, all this area, the landowner originally was Connolly, Speaker Connolly from Kildare. And this was their shooting ground, shooting lodge. And the last remaining of the old houses up there, which was the Killickey restaurant more recently, that was the Connolly Shooting Lodge. And that was built in 1765. And a man named Luke White, who was Ireland's richest man around 1800, he bought a lot of land in different parts of the country, and he bought the Killickey estate off Speaker Connolly. He bought about 3,000 acres. Now, he owned other land here down at Woodtown as well. And it was Luke White who built the original house, Killickey House, here. And in time, that passed to his son, Luke Jr. And Luke Jr. owned Woodtown, and he owned here as well. And it was he and his wife who developed the gardens. There were beautiful gardens here as well. In time, because they had no children, and Luke White's sister married Lord Massey, in time the estate passed to the Masseys through the sister, because when Luke died and then his wife died, they had no offspring, so they left it through the sister to Lord Massey, and that's how the Masseys came into it. And the Masseys lived here from the late 1800s up until 1924, when the 8th Baron Massey was evicted.
Right. Now, Joan, you knew the Masseys.
I did indeed. When Lord Massey was evicted, he was taken out. He was in bed sick. He was taken out on a stretcher and he was left out on the roadside at the lodge. One of the lodges belonged to the house. That's the one at the corner of the sawmill. The entrance to the
Oh,
sawmill,
yes,
that was the lodge right there at the gate. He was left there in a stretcher. So he was left there for maybe an hour, and the lady in the lodge took him in until she never liked to be called Lady Massey. Mrs. Massey got it organised, an ambulance, and got him into hospital. So he was taken from that gate lodge into hospital. So then the house was taken over. Some builder bought the house and demolished the house. And in the agreement, they got the beehive cottage to live in. Now, the beehive cottage is down on the top of the hill, and they lived there until he died. So,
what are your memories of the house? How does it look?
well, I was there when the auction took place with my mother and my father, and we bought a beautiful surround and two fireplaces out of it. And there was once spiral stairs this side of the building, and we weren't allowed to go up that. That was where all the maids went up that spiral stairs, but they said it was too dangerous, and no one was allowed to go up the spiral stairs. So we went up the main stairs and into all the rooms. But they were just absolutely beautiful to think the way it was destroyed. It didn't look that bad for anything was wrong with it, and it was demolished. And the builder sold all the granite steps. They dug up all the steps out of the ground, and all the granite was taken away. And the pillars from the main door, they were broken, and some of them was taken away, and there's still some there, kind of covered up with mud and whatever.
And the gardens?
Gardens were beautiful. We used to have birthday parties in it. My aunts from the Crook over that way had to have a birthday party. Now, some of the glass was broken and all when we had the birthday parties in it, but they were just absolutely beautiful. Now, the pears was on the trees, and peaches, everything was all around the walls. It was just beautiful, but overgrown. And then there was different heights going up the garden, steps right through the orchard where all the apples and all were, right along the riverside. It was just beautiful.
And you remember as a child playing around the gardens?
Oh, yes, yeah. All the time. Yeah, we were all the time in the gardens. And then even when they knocked down the house, there was cellars where they kept kind of meat or whatever that hang up there in the cellars. And we used to run through all the cellars as children. But the whole main house is knocked down. And underneath where the main door was, there was a lovely big square. And we turned it into a shop. And all our pals and come from school, and we'd have this little shop and whatever. But what else? Then Lord Massey, he was very, very nice. When he was come back home out of hospital, he used to walk down our field. You see, all this was Massey's ground. These were the lawns. And the Land Commission then took it over. And then the tenants that lived around, that's how we got the land from the Land Commission.
Yeah, it was
Divided.
Yeah.
And then the shortcut from the pub down in Rockbrook, it was Mitchell's that time was the name of it, and he used to go down there for a drink, and he'd come up the field, he'd meet me. I'd be going down to bring up the cows to be milked, and he'd meet me, and he always called me Joni, and he'd have all the different sayings, and he'd say to me then, he put his hand on my shoulder and he said, "Joan, if those trees could speak and those mountains could see, many a tale would be told."
Yeah. Did he say that?
He used to always say that because he'd have a few drinks on and he was upset and he'd be thinking, I suppose, all the things that had happened.
Do you think he was very passionate about this place, very close to the...
Oh, he was. Oh, gosh, his heart and soul was in it. He really and truly loved it. But and you'd know like how upset he was the way things went. And it wasn't all his fault either. And the neighbours around here used to think it was his fault and they hadn't that much sympathy for him.
Yeah.
But then when he got sick then, he was down in the house in bed. But his wife, Lady Massey, which she never liked to be called Lady Massey, she started little tea rooms in the cottage because she had no other income. And I used to help with the teas down there. And every Sunday and Saturday, there'd be lots of lovely people coming in for afternoon tea. And she carried on that for a good many years, giving this lovely afternoon tea. But she was a lady. She was a beautiful person.
Was she?
She was a beautiful person. Mm. And she was so kind and good to him. She was really very, because when he was, that's how they met. He was in hospital and she nursed him. And then that's how they met and that's how they got married.
Tell me about, you were living where now at this stage?
I was living across the road because we had part of the Lord Massey's buildings that they used to keep the horses in. And that was our yard. That's where we kept our cattle and cows there. Mm-hmm. So we lived across the road, but we had to bring our cows across the road for to milk them. And we'd have to stop the traffic on a Sunday evening and to let them through to just cross over the road. And
and your father, he was farming the land commission gave him a little bit of land, did they, from the estate?
We got 34 acres from the Land Commission. And that's how my father built the house across the road, because it was part of the land across the road, just enough for the yard and a house. So he built the house. That was 1937. He had the house built. We moved in March 1938.
Oh, where were you before that?
In Rockbrook.
In Rockbrook, yeah.
Rockbrook, just about 2 miles down the road.
Yeah. So you know this place. You've been here all your life.
Well, I'm here since
you got
I
married
was
then to
6 year old.
Yeah.
I got married then to Vinton.
O'Kelly.
O'Kelly, yeah. And actually, Vinton O'Kelly was, I don't know what cousin, I had to get a dispensation to get married. He was one that came from the Casey Mountain, one of the upper crew Caseys.
Yeah.
And that's who I married.
How do you
second cousin, first removed or something.
Yes, and that's why you had to get a dispensation.
Yeah, you couldn't get married that close, and it wasn't that really close.
Yeah.
But you couldn't get married.
You had to
be nearly a black stranger before. I don't know where it's going to be now.
But it's interesting how, so you would have known everything going on here.
Everything that was going on.
Yeah. Yeah. And was it a very quiet place to grow up, or was it, was there a lot of activity?
No, it was very, very quiet. Very, very quiet. Because there wasn't many houses here. There was Dials and then Lady Massey themselves, and we were Caseys. And then there was Foxes, Morris Fox, but he was the caretaker of Lord Massey's. So he lived in a little lodge directly opposite our gate there in the forest. That's where he lived as a caretaker for Lord
Massey. Did you ever get talking to him?
No, I didn't remember him. Mm-hmm. I only remembered his daughter, but she's dead years now. Margaret Fox was her name. They got the other house across the road where the restaurant is now. They moved from the lodge into the bigger house, the restaurant. And it was her and her mother. That's all that lived there. Morris Fox was dead at that time. And I just knew them. So.
What about the Hellfire Club itself? What are your memories of?
Well, the Hellfire Club, as I remembered it, was built with slate stones from the ground arch right up to the other side. But then as time went by, it kind of got broken down, and the county council took it over then and said it was dangerous. And they broke down more of it, they destroyed it. They built up a straight wall, both sides, where it was beautifully drawn down, sloped right to the ground. But they didn't leave it like that and built up two square walls and then just left the top of it.
They just changed the whole look of it.
Yeah.
Was there any folklore or any stories about the Hellfire Club passed down to you?
The only story was where my father always told us that they came on horseback from Bonabrina side to play cards in it. And they gambled their shirt playing cards in it. And there's no way that they used to come only by horseback up into it. And that was genuine. They did play cards in it. But then the story went on, of course, the black cat, the devil appeared. And seemingly there was a priest there playing cards as well. And a card fell on the floor. And when they looked down, there was a club foot. And of course, the priest must have done his magic tricks. And it went out through. There was always a hole where in the roof. And they always said that's where the devil went out through the hole in the roof. Where it was falling down at this time. That was the story of that time, but like they did play cards in it.
Yeah, and your father actually had memories of
it. He had the memories of all of that
time.
Yeah.
Imagine.
Yeah. But,
and they always came in horseback. Is that right?
Mm.
Never in a carriage.
No. It was only kind of a little track. It was only a track, a footpath up to it. It wasn't even a footpath up to it, up through the mountains.
Yeah.
There's no way into it.
Yeah. Was it always had it always an eerie look about it, or was
Oh yeah, I never remembered it any other way, and just as it is. But it was beautifully built, and they destroyed it. It was a terrible shame. And I looked and looked. We had photographs here of it, where some of my nieces and nephews were sitting on little edges of it. I can't find them. I was looking for them. It's just the shape of it was beautiful.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to look forward soon, Frank, to going up there and seeing it with you, and we'd go through the the history of it, and it'll be very interesting. Mm-hmm. But Joan, you know, another part of your life was looking after the animals and the farm and
that always. I delivered the milk down to Hughes's. I milked the cows and I collected four different farmers' milk from here down to the Rathfarm Golf Club. That was my cousin's farm down there in the Rathfarm Golf Club. He was another Casey.
And this was a collection of the fresh milk from the farmers down the road.
Down, and I brought all that down.
Did you?
And then I had to bring Lady Massey and Lord Massey. She wanted to go into town for something. And I was after getting a new van, but there was only one seat in it, a driver's seat. And then there was only nothing here, but the driver's seat was here, you know, and the back then was kind of just there. And I had to get two cushions because Lord Massey wanted to come to town with Mrs. Massey and had to bring them into Cleary's. So the two of them had to sit. I had to get two cushions, no back or anything. And sure, they were delighted, sat beside me, and I drove into Cleary's with them. And I didn't know where to park then, but I went down by the side of Cleary's and I stopped there.
Yeah.
Because I couldn't get out, I had to stay and mind him in the car. He wasn't that really good. He was recovering after being sick. And she went in and got whatever she wanted. I'd done that a couple of times, brought them into Cleary's.
Did you?
Two of them, yeah.
So you chauffeured them around a bit as well.
Yeah.
But going back to the collecting the milk, would the farmers have the milk ready for you?
Oh, be on the road. And I lift, and they were big, heavy churns. I lift them into the van myself. I've one big knee here from just pushing the churns into the van. And I used to get a penny a gallon for delivering them when they get their paycheck. At the end of the month, I got my little lump sum from each of the farmers. So whatever milk was counted in Hughes's, they knew what each farmer had in the month.
Was it Hughes's co-op zone
that
you brought the milk
Hughes
to?
Brothers. Hughes Brothers. It was that time, yeah. And I brought the meat there for years and years. And even when I was married and had my children, they used to come with me, the ones to be a little bit bigger, 2 to 3 year old, and they'd stand between the milk churns. I just said, what we used to do at that time, you couldn't bring the kids between the milk churns now. They used to love coming in.
How many years did you do that for?
Oh, I did that for...
Since you were a young girl?
Yeah, I suppose from the time I was maybe 18, 19, right up to 1950, I'd say.
All that length of time.
Yeah, 1950.
Well, that was indeed a way of making a few bob for yourself as well. Yeah,
exactly, yeah. It was paying me for my petrol. And then we were the only one had a van here during the war because we had the cattle, the milk farm, and we had coupons for the petrol. We had to get the petrol by coupons. So then we used to use the van, and we weren't allowed it. The guard side with the van out during the day or at night time, you'd be stopped because you weren't allowed. Only bring it for your work. So we always brought 2 milk churns and buckets and a little one-legged stool, and we'd say that we had cattle anywhere, you know, for to milk, and then you'd be allowed to go ahead. You had ground rented, such a place, and it'd be all right to go
ahead. That was during the emergency time?
Yeah.
And was that about the time that Mrs. Massey and that you brought her into Cleary's with?
That wasn't during the war, no, because we had the new KRI 604, that was the registration. We had just got the new van that time, so there's no coupons or anything that time. That was in the good times.
Yeah.
And
yes, do you remember the lean years and the good years? Well, you're too young to know what happened during the Hungry 30s, but...
Well, we couldn't get tea, and I couldn't drink the cocoa. And we used to buy this shell cocoa for the calves, and everyone used to drink that as well, but I couldn't drink this cocoa. or coffee or whatever it was. I couldn't drink any of that. But the shell cocoa was only like shells. And we'd have a big, big pot on the fire and we fed the calves with the shell cocoa. And then I could only drink milk, couldn't drink it. So then when we brought the milk then down, this was going back that it wasn't in Hughes's that time, it was in Pedlow's in Harold's Cross. That's before Hughes's was taken. And Freddie Pedlow said that he had a sister with a shop up the north and she could get tea for us. So every week we'd get a pound of tea for a pound of money. What I mean? Whatever.
And that came down from the north?
That came from the north, from Pedlow's sister. So at least I got tea.
I think the Caseys did very well during the emergency time between the petrol and the tea.
Yeah, we did actually. That was a part of that.
But like you said, it was quite enough. There weren't too many families living up here.
No, there wasn't. No.
And the large estate with all its lovely buildings. Of course, when you're living here, you don't appreciate.
No, we didn't think any. And people would come up and say, "The beautiful view." I didn't even notice it. you get used to it, and you don't think anything of it.
Do you remember the time of the compulsory tillage just during?
Yes. We had to always had to sow oats, no matter what happened. Oats had to be sowed, and oats didn't do well here at all. The barley used to do much better than the oats, but you had to do so many acres of the things that they tell you to do. But we had hard times with the snow and frost. It was awful snow and frost that time, with the turnips and mangels for the cattle, and they'd freeze up in the ground. I remember going down trying to snag them, pull them out of the frost and snow to bring them in for the cattle. So I did all that. I worked on the farm all the time.
What about, did you have your other siblings?
Well, see, I was the baby of the family and my eldest sister was 20 years older than me. And
There was a big difference between you?
Yeah, there was eight of us altogether. Yeah. So I have two sisters left and one of them just up the road and... she's Lena Quinn. She's 91. Mm-hmm. And then I have another sister and she's 87. She's in a nursing home. And there's only myself left then. I had three brothers actually. One was killed at Kilmashogue Corner. My grandparents in Crook bought him a bicycle for his 14th birthday and he was coming around the corner on the White Line bus.
Hit him.
Yes. And the handlebars of the bike went through his stomach. There wasn't a mark on him, but he died.
Mm-hmm. Your grandparents, you have memories of your grandparents, do you?
Oh, I do. Well, my mother's people, not that much because they were dead before I kind of come to use the reason, but I remember the grandfather Crook. And there was a little blackthorn tree outside of grandmother's house, and grandfather always sat, he had a little seat in the tree, and he had his rosary beads always. I can remember him anything. And my sister and myself would go up, and Rita used to say, you wouldn't say men, she used to say manses. You met two manses on the road or whatever. And he'd say, well, did you meet any manses on the road today? He'd be sitting waiting for us at the tree for us to go in. But oh, that was lovely going into grandmother's. And because we only lived in Rockford, just down below them. And we'd come back home with potatoes and white turnips. That time, they're pulling them out of the ground. To bring them back down, because we hadn't the farm that time. And
because your dad was working with...
he was working on the home with them in Crook. He was the ploughman.
Was he?
For his own parents. And he ploughed everywhere, Bona Breena, Edmundstown, over here in Stockton Lane, Shaws. He ploughed for everyone. He was the ploughman. He went around all the different places ploughing.
He would be contracted out with the horses.
There's no tractors or anything. But the Caseys had a pit as well up in Crook, and they had all these trucks with solid wheels. And my father delivered all the stone down by Loretta College in Grange Road. They built all those roads, the cases, all down around Rathfarnham.
And they brought the stone from what quarry? Or?
It's just on your way up to, past the Crook Cemetery, on the left-hand side, there's a hollow. And it was always called the hollow. And in there on the left, it's right at the bridge, that's where all the stone came out of that pit. There were sand pits there and mm-hmm. stone. And that time there was no rubber tires. There were solid tires on the truck. And they used to go down there. They were brought them in horses and carts as well. But when they started getting their trucks, there were solid wheels.
And they were involved in that for
the
council.
That was the business.
Wasn't that interesting? So a lot of the roads around here would have been built by the Casey's. They certainly they left their mark around
they
here.
Really did,
what
yeah.
about the during the time, I suppose, of just after the war years, a lot of Irish people emigrated to England. Would any of your people have emigrated at that stage?
No, they didn't really. None of the cases are.
There was enough of work around here to keep them at home.
Yeah, none of them went away at all. No, they all were homebirds. Nobody had to go away. Well, they had enough work with the sand pits and gravel pits and that.
Yeah.
And they were all kind of in the one business, you know. Yeah. So.
With all the change now, with all the buildings and such change, but in your early days, you would have remembered nothing but green fields all the way down.
There was no houses here at all. Green fields everywhere. And even going up to Bonabrina, you wouldn't see a house on the odd house in Bonabrina as well. No, there's houses everywhere. Even to look out there through the view and see it at night time and lights the whole way around, you would see a few lights just around near Holt there, but now the whole circle of lights at night time.
Yeah, all things are built lit up really. And talking about electricity, of course, I'd say, when did electricity come in here?
Now, asking me that.
Was there a generator over in the estate?
No, there was nothing. I don't know about Lord Massey. They had some kind of horse generator for there, but we never had. And I remember when the electricity came. God, it's terrible, I can't remember what year. It was in the 30s anyway, 30. Maybe 39 or sometime around there. And the lights went on in the house. And I remember running across with a little green patch to go over to the yard, across the road, to tell my father to come down quick. The lights were on, and you couldn't believe the difference. You could see every corner of the house. Before, we'd only have lamps hanging on the wall. It made such a difference. And you could see every hole and corner if it was dirty, because everything, you couldn't hide anything away. It was the most brilliant thing that ever we could get. So after that, then we got electricity in the yard then. And we had lights all in the shed after that.
Yeah. And did people could work late into the night and
with electricity.
Of the light?
Oh, yeah. It was the most wonderful thing that ever could happen to us.
Yeah.
For the length of time, they made all these candles and oil lamps. And you'd have to, 4 o'clock, my mother used to always say, make sure, Joan, you clean those globes and clean the wick before it gets dark and fill the lamps with paraffin oil. That had to be done at 4 o'clock. No matter what happened, because when they get dark, you couldn't see what you're doing.
Yeah.
So they had to be ready to be just put the match to light.
Was your mother a very enterprising woman? She with the way she had you out collecting the milk.
She was marvellous. She come from a very large family, Cosgraves. You probably know the Cosgrave builders.
Oh, indeed. Yeah.
They're my cousins.
Yeah.
And there was 22 christened in Dundrum Church, my mother's family. Now, 22 didn't live, but there's 22 christened in Dundrum Church.
Where did your mother come in that 22?
She was about middle ways in the family.
Yeah.
And then when she got married, her mother gave her a pony and trap. And that was like a Rolls Royce. It was absolutely, nobody had a pony and trap at that time. Yeah. And my mother going around this lovely pony and trap. We lived in Kilmashogue that time. And she'd go down to Dundrum because my uncle had the butchers in Dundrum. They all had a lot of shops on the Cosgrove. And used to do the shopping in Dundrum. And we'd all have this little drive in the pony and trap. She had it for years and years. She got a second pony. Then that one got too old. And we had the pony and another pony and trap, of course, then when we were up here, when we'd no cars, we'd have the pony and trap going down the road for whatever.
Yeah.
And then we were the first in Killikea to have a phone. Dr. Singh lived further up the road, but he had a phone. He was the only one in Killikea that had a phone. So then we got a phone. And we were the only one for, I'm sure, must be nearly 30 years before anyone got a phone. Then we were the first to get a television. And that was great, the television. We only got it on trial. My brother knew somebody. And he said, look, just bring it up and try it.
Yeah.
And see how it'll work. We didn't even have to put up an aerial. It worked so good. And for Lady Massey, she used to love the races. And she'd come up, the house would be full. When we only lived across the road, in that little house across the road, house would be full when the football matches would be on. And then races. The dad come to look at the races on our television. That was
it was the meeting house, so
it was brilliant. It was brilliant.
Yeah. Tell me about, you know, just going back to Lord Massey again, did he ever talk to you about the circumstances that led to his downfall, really?
No, he never did. They were only the words he'd say. He'd be so sad and he'd looking around the way things went. But he never discussed anything with me. Never. Mm-hmm. Never.
Yeah, but you were such a young girl at that stage, but maybe he didn't really want to.
Now, then I used to meet him then. Hans Batche, was he a German or something?
Dutch.
And he used to make charcoal over in the forest. And I don't know how that Lord Massey got a job with him. I don't know how much he was giving him. I wouldn't think he was giving him much money. And again, I'd meet him in the morning when I'd be bringing the cows across the road or back of it. And he had a little Tommy can, we called him that time, tied to his belt.
Yeah.
And I suppose his little bit of tea and milk or whatever for his lunch. And you'd see him going over every morning. And he'd just talk to me again as he's going over to work, you know, good morning and how things are and all. And off he'd go to work. And I'd see him come back in the evening time again, after doing his little job where he was working over with the Hans Vache.
What was he doing?
They were making charcoal.
Yeah.
I don't know what he was. I used to never go over to see what was going on, but we always knew he was making charcoal.
But Joan, looking out your window here in the house, you're looking right down into Dublin City and the Bay. It's a beautiful place to live up here. But like that again, you never really saw the view. You said you were only interested in collecting the milk and getting jobs done. But the house with all your brothers and sisters in the house and the you know, you told me there was a big gap between yourself and your eldest sister. It was 20 years. Was your mother must have been a very young woman when she got married then to your father, was she?
I don't know, she wasn't, because she was 46 when 47 when I was born.
Yeah.
So that's how, because there was 8 of us all together.
Yeah.
So I kind of just don't remember her very young, as my other sisters would remember her young. I used to think she was old, do you know?
Yeah.
And although she was great, she was a great dressmaker, great cook. She made all our clothes. She cooked anything that you could mention. Beautiful meals. She was a really marvellous, marvellous cook.
But what tell me, because there was 8 of you, because your dad, he was out on the farm, in different farms, working for the farmers, there couldn't have been a lot of money coming into the house.
There wasn't. No.
So your mother had to make ends meet with
She really
best
did.
She could.
She really did. I remember we had these lovely grey duffel coats, myself and my sister, my next to me. And after a year or whatever we had the coat, she'd ripped them all back up and there was red plaid on the inside and she machined them all back with two lovely red plaid coats. The following year, you think there were two new coats. You think there were two coats in your...
Were they army coats?
No, just you bought these duffel coats. They came in that time. And there was no lining in them. But the inside of the grey was lovely red plaid.
Yeah.
And she'd ripped them up and sewed them. And the same with the flour bags. When we got the flour bags, she ripped up the flour bags and got the sign of the flour out of them. She'd steeped them and I think it was washing soda or something. And we had beautiful white, lovely sheets for the bed made out of flour bags. And that's, she used to do that. And also with tweed skirts and all these different clothes that we finished with, she used to cut them up in squares and made lovely quilts for the bed with all tweed skirts and coats and whatever clothes you'd have. She'd cut them up in squares and make lovely quilts for the bed. And people used to come in and say, God, Miss Casey, your bed's lovely. All these... made out of nothing.
But that's what I mean, that they were, people were very thrifty,
well,
spared every
be.
Penny.
You had to be too, you know.
And the farm produced most of what was that on the table?
Oh, yes, with potatoes and all sorts of vegetables. Yeah, and then the milk as well. And then we'd catch rabbits. We used to eat the rabbits as well. They were great go at that time. Like you boil them and then you can fry them when they're boiled and beautiful then to fry them. So we used to have all of that kind of thing. And then we used to have to eat the nettles, 3 feeds of nettles every year. That's very good for you, the new nettles when they come out.
The iron.
She used to always say, no, you have to get your 3 feeds of nettles in.
Imagine.
Yeah,
yes.
So we'd have to have that. And all are different. Our cod liver oil every day and whatever.
I'd say very little sickness in the house.
Oh, never, thank God. None of us ever. And I'm the same. I don't take nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just an odd Panadol around me if I had a headache. That's it.
But just going back to your uncles again. Now, they you said that they worked with these trucks, almost like Crosley Tenders, really.
Exactly.
And they... had they their own company or were they...
What
were they called?
No, I couldn't tell you. I think just only Casey's Sand and Gravel, as far as I know.
And did they own that little quarry you
spoke
about?
Yes. Oh, yeah, that was on their own land. Yeah. It all came out of their own land.
Yeah. And again, that was very enterprising, wasn't it?
That was marvellous. Yeah. That was really...
And they sold all the stone and the gravel that came out of the quarry.
That. Yeah. So...
And I suppose, did you know your uncles? Were you familiar with them?
Oh, God, yes. Like,
Were they living locally?
Yeah, because Uncle George lived right at the, he built a house there, he built 3 houses actually. The last one he lived in is beside the Crook Cemetery. And then Uncle Patrick lived in the original, his father's place. And then my father then built a house here. And Uncle Mick, then he was the eldest. He lived down in Fortfield Drive, but he was the same. He did all the roads as well. That's what their business were. So then his son, Uncle Mick's son, Michael Casey, he lived down in Carlow then, and he'd done all the roads from Dublin to Cork. He'd a very big company. And that was his business.
It all started with the...
Yeah, started kind of from the small thing.
Yes. Your father never got involved with them.
He did his own thing. He was all the... But then my brother then, Jim, he was in the sand and gravel before he got married. We were into all that as well. And then my husband was the same. He had all the machines. And he did the same thing. So then we started the sawmill here. And it kind of started from the trucks, really. we were always doing repairs with the trucks and that. So then I got that big shed built for the cattle, because we couldn't keep bringing the cattle across the road when the traffic got so busy. You couldn't get them across on a Sunday. And we built the shed there then for them. And we used to do all our farming from that shed. So then the dairy then, that had to fold up. You had to have an awful lot of cows and everything for to keep a dairy farm. And they closed down all the small farmers.
Mm-hmm.
So we had to give up that. And then we started then with the timber and the sawmill. And that went very, very well then.
When did that start?
Let's see now. Henry's 47. It's over 20 years. It's over 20 years going. Mm-hmm. It's going very, very well. He does all the Cosgrove's houses with fencing and garden sheds. And now he's got in new decking that doesn't, moss doesn't grow on it, or it's non-slip. He has all that in from the States, and he's the main agent for it as well.
But all the ideas and all the work, it kind of, it goes back again, doesn't it?
Oh, it does, actually.
The time when... I suppose your father's brothers got out onto the field and decided that they could make money out of the stone in the field.
And my brother done the very same. He bought a house in Bona Breena, and he had a pit in Bona Breena, and he delivered all the gravel to Crumlin Hospital. My brother did.
Yeah.
Gravel and sand and everything from the pit in Bona Breena built Crumlin Hospital.
Yeah.
So we were all in the that business, trucks, and even my son Henry, he's the same with the machines. He went on the same. He carried on, and then the sawmill as well.
Yeah,
he does all of that. So.
But I would imagine that the just going back again to, I suppose your very early memories of the place around here. The do you know? There was such a big number of you, and when the Land Commission, I think it was 1928, wasn't it, around that time? They started dividing up the estates.
Mm.
That made a big difference to the farmers. I mean, they had a bit of land then that they could work with.
But when they got the extra amount, it made such a difference.
Yeah. Were you aware of what was happening?
At that time, I didn't, because I was only 5 or 6. You know,
but you were moved, weren't you? You were moved.
I was moved when I was 6, yeah, and that was great, because we moved from Rockbrook. We were in a bungalow down in Rockbrook, and then we moved up here. So there's a big difference.
Yeah.
To come up here and start living up in the mountains, and had to walk back down the fields to Edmonton School, winter and summer.
How far? But down.
We always went through the fields, because that was a shortcut, and right out at the Crook Cemetery, and down to Edmundstown School there. That's where we started, down in Edmundstown School. So I ended up in the presentation in Terenure then.
Oh, did you?
So I used to go down with my father in the milk car, because he used to deliver the milk with the spout can and 2 milk churns in the back of the float. And then he used to bring me down in that and leave me in Terenure, because he did it all around Leinster Road and Palmerston Road, deliver from house to house with the spout can and the tilly and milk for the cat, the dolls. I used to do that on a Saturday and Sunday with him, deliver the milk all around the
house. And you kind of took over from him then,
From him, yeah. But then we weren't going around then delivering from house to house. We started bringing it to Pedlows, and then it ended up then we were bringing it to Hughes Brothers.
Was your dad working for somebody else when he was doing
No. He was finished. He'd only go out like in the spring for the plough, but he was doing most of it at home then.
And when he was delivering the milk, did he do it himself?
He done it himself for himself, yeah. And
that was long before pasteurised milk, of course.
Yeah, that was straight from the cow, delivered from house to house.
into the galvanized
measure, we call it.
there was no milk bottles either.
No. Then I had another adventure too. I started a little shop outside our old house, and I used to sell cigarettes and sweets and minerals and ice cream, because the lorries were coming up with all the men going to the turf bog to cut turf, and the big lorry load of men that'd be picked up in town here with their bicycles, and they'd stop at the shop because I'd have it open early. They'd come up at 7:30 in the morning, and they'd buy their biscuits and cigarettes and their minerals or whatever going up to the bog. And on the way down on the bikes, I'd make sure I'd be in it there again, and the stuff again for something else. They'd be going home. That was great. I think of all that.
Were you married at that stage?
No, I wasn't. No, I wasn't married at that time.
And where did you get the money to set it up?
Well, what happened was we bought these. There was only like timber that the motor cars used to come in the Morris Miners over there in the Nace Road.
Yeah.
And these big car cases. We bought those and made the shop out of a car case.
My goodness.
Yeah, my brother and a neighbour down the road, and then built up this little hut and put the electricity into it and started the shop on the side of the road. That was brilliant. I used to love that.
And the bog was just up the road
up
here.
Yeah.
And who? What's the story behind that bog? Do you remember yourself going up and cutting?
Yeah. Oh God, I did. Yeah. I had to buy a plot, and had this plot, and you cut the turf out, and then you'd have to spread it. And sure, I used to go up every day as well. My father would cut it, and then he'd leave it on in a big heap, and then I used to have to get the wheelbarrow and put it on the wheelbarrow, and then spread it all over. And then when it was dry after spreading, you put in little stooks like that, and then when it dry out the stooks, then you stacked it up, and then the truck would come up and take it, bring it down for you. We burned turf all the time.
There was very little else. God. What about all the trees around here? Did you use when the mill started?
We bought a good piece of ground up in Glencullen, but you had to pay for it straight away, and then we had to get a horse. I have to couldn't tell you the story about the horse. We had to get a horse then to pull out the timber when they'd cut it down. My son used to go up and cut it down, and get a horse and pull it out to the side for to bring it down for to cut it and cut all the bark off it. We had a big saw for doing that. So then it didn't pay like that, because the length of time you had paid the forestry for it, and then the length of time you got it to get money out of it, it didn't pay at all. You were losing money. So then he started buying timber in, where when he cut all the timber out of the forestry and got that finished, he'd never buy it again, because it was costing too much money for it. You had to pay straight away for it, and it could be 2 years or more before you get the timber out for to make money out of it. So then he started buying in the timber.
Well, I could see, Joan, right through your whole story, the way you're so interested in making a business for yourself and making a go of it.
Henry always says that. He says, only for you. He says, we wouldn't be where we are today. Then, you had to borrow money he wanted this huge big tractor, he called it Amy, for to work on the bog. It had two big double wheels in the front and in the back, and where could we get money now, Mum? What could we do? So my cousin worked in the Allied Finance in Ballsbridge. So I rang her, and she said to me, come in to me, we see what I do. So I got the loan to get the big tractor, and he went up to, he started cutting turf with this big tractor. That's what he went up there for. And he rented land from a good few of the people up on the top of the mountain.
A bit like what your dad did with his plough and his horses. But listen, looking back over all those years now, what was the big change in all of those years? The one big change that stands out in your memory?
Well, the big change was that you hadn't to work so hard. all the machinery, when the machinery came, you weren't carrying ever. I carried bales of hay out into the field and into the big feeders, and where the cattle would be around the feeders, I lost my welly boots so many times trying to get the bales of hay into that. Then they got the machinery, no bother. You carried out the bales of hay on the forks of the tractor. No work whatsoever. And when I think of all the ways that I had to just do it, and everything was so easy with machinery.
Yeah.
There's no manual work whatsoever.
Yeah. Well, Joan O'Kelly, that was a great story, and thank you for telling it to me. Thank you.
Well, I hope you'll be able to make a good job of that.